From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Massive protests have gripped the nation of Haiti for days now over demands for Haitian President Jovenel Moïse to resign. Facing Haiti's economy in free fall and accusations of corruption and state repression, mass opposition to Moïse's rule has been building up for months and even years. Last Wednesday, protests brought major cities to a standstill. And opposition leader André Michel urged protesters to keep up the pressure by continuing the street demonstrations. Haiti has been racked by political turmoil going back really over 10 years when a U.S.-backed coup ousted the democratically elected government of Jean-Bertrand Aristide. We turn now to Seth Donnelly. He's a member of the Haiti Action Committee. He's also a public high school teacher in the Bay Area of California. He's the author of the 2005 report, Growing Evidence of a Massacre by U.N. Occupation Forces in Port-au-Prince neighborhood of Cité-Soleil. And he co-authored the more recent report, The La Saline Massacre and the Human Rights Crisis in Haiti. Welcome to the program, Seth.
Thank you so much, Sonali.
So first, let's talk about what has just happened. I understand that the protests began in earnest last Wednesday. What is the state of Haiti right now as you and I are speaking?
So Haiti is basically paralyzed with almost like a general strike all across the island. There's been, as you mentioned, there's been protests relatively relentlessly over the last year and going even further back before then, but really a high level of protests over the last year. But there's been ebbs and flows. And so just this last week, there's been a complete spike in protests all across the island, protesters unarmed protesters confronting police who are shooting lethal rounds into crowds, confronting tear gas, but they're not backing down. They've created barricades in the streets. There's reports of police headquarters being occupied. And all across the island, the country is in an uprising.
And so what are the main points of concern? I mentioned that the economic situation is pretty dire, but Jovenel Moïse also faces some pretty serious accusations around corruption, et cetera. What exactly do protesters want from the presidency?
They want the president to step down. They want an end to the regime. The most powerful political force in Haiti is the Lavalas movement. That's the grassroots people's movement. It's been based in the poor majority that has been a force of activism going all the way back to the first election of President Aristide in 1990. So Famille Lavalas, that's the political party that has grown out of the Lavalas movement, issued a statement last November called Crisis and Solution in Haiti. And that statement, which is relatively short, articulates the demands of the broader opposition movement, which is that the regime itself needs to be uprooted, that there needs to be a truly progressive interim government installed that is capable of organizing fair and free elections, and that the theft of billions of dollars by the current regime needs to be, that money needs to be regained and invested in public infrastructure.
Now, as I mentioned, the anger among Haitians doesn't just go back a few weeks or a few months, right? I mean, right from the start, Moïse's government has faced a protest. What is the opposition politically that he faces? I mentioned one opposition leader, André Michel. Is the Lavalas party allowed to organize? Are they allowed to put up political candidates for office? Do they have a political program in the wings if and when Moïse steps down or is ousted?
So as you mentioned, the 2004 coup that toppled President Aristide, there's been mass political repression ever since that coup, which is one of the more underreported things in the progressive media here in the United States. The death toll from that coup in the first 16 months alone surpasses arguably the death toll in Chile after the Pinochet coup. So there was a Lancet study that was done from the Lancet Journal that found that in Port-au-Prince alone, there was 8,000 violent deaths in the first 16 months following the coup. Those are largely politically targeted murders in which Lavalas activists were systematically being hunted down and killed. That was part of my initial work in Haiti, was to go there and do human rights assessments. And that's when we also went into Cité Soleil in the summer of 2005 and found that there had been a huge massacre carried out by UN occupation troops. Cité Soleil is a very poor neighborhood that is a base of the Lavalas movement. So that early repression in the months and years following the coup has completely traumatized the country, but yet the people have not backed down. And so it's this latest series of puppet regimes installed by the United States, starting with Marta Lee in fraudulent elections that excluded Fami Lavalas from participation. And then more recently, that installed Jovenel Moïse in 2016. Even though those elections technically included a Fami Lavalas candidate, Dr. Marie Narcisse, the elections were based on widespread voter suppression, massive fraud that everybody in Haiti is aware of, and it's been well documented internationally as well. So despite that, and those elections, by the way, what Haitians call selections, those are sponsored by U.S. taxpayer dollars. That happened during the Obama presidency, and then with the Trump administration coming in, the Trump administration has continued to support the Moïse dictatorship. What's happened is in the last several years is that as more and more information has come out about the massive looting of public funds by the Moïse regime, what is known as the Petrocaribe scandal, where the regime is linked to $4 billion in stolen money, that plus the deepening deterioration of life for the masses of people. Like the Haitian goud is now at 85 to 1 U.S. dollar, which means when Haitians buy U.S. imports such as rice, it's harder and harder for people to survive at all. On top of the deterioration of public services like trash pickup, sanitation, all of that, plus just murderous repression has pushed people to the brink, where we now see young people not backing down at all. That right now the country, as I said a few minutes ago, is literally paralyzed.
Let's talk about the report that you co-authored earlier this year, centered around a massacre that apparently took place in a neighborhood of Port-au-Prince last November. Tell us a little bit about this massacre and what you found in the report.
So the massacre happened in a neighborhood called La Salite, which is also in Port-au-Prince, and it's similar to Cité Soleil, in that both Cité Soleil and La Salite are both close to the ports, and they're both in the way Port-au-Prince is set up. The flats where La Salina and Cité Soleil have the highest density of the impoverished population. So La Salina is a very impoverished neighborhood. It's also a neighborhood like Cité Soleil of massive Lavalas resistance. So protest after protest against the fraudulent elections of Jovenel Moïse were staged at La Salina. Protests against the Petrocaribe scandal have happened out of La Saline. So what we see then is that starting last fall in 2018, almost a year ago, the First Lady of Haiti, Martine Moïse, reportedly from members in La Saline, went there and tried to bribe off the community from engaging in further protests. That effort at bribery failed. Protests continued to happen. And consequently, on November 1st, some community leaders out of La Saline were attacked. One was killed, another was imprisoned. And then about two weeks later, in mid-November, a paramilitary affiliate of the regime, coordinated by a high-level regime official named Pierre Duplan, entered La Saline and for several days and several nights systematically butchered dozens, if not hundreds, of people. We know at least, according to a conservative estimate, 71 people were systematically killed. These were men, women, and children. People were hacked into body parts fed to pigs. People were burned alive.
Oh my goodness!
But it could well be in the hundreds because bodies were disappeared. The paramilitary affiliate, which was led involving a former police officer known as Barbecue, as well as a right-wing attaché in that area known as T. Jr. They were also accompanied by police vehicles and police. One of the assault rifles recovered from the massacre was registered to the National Palace, and it's widely known inside of Haiti and even cited in a UN report last June that Pierre Duplan, a PHTK, that's the ruling party, official close to the Moïse regime, was the coordinator of this horrific massacre. It is the worst massacre in Haiti since the Duvalier period in the 1980s.
And there's, I understand, been no accountability.
No accountability. In fact, Pierre Duplan continues to operate with full impunity. He has reportedly made death threats on a human rights attorney who's defending political prisoners just this last summer. The former police officer Barbecue operates with impunity, and more massacres are happening across the island.
I want to pick
Barbecue
up on
also, just one last other point. Barbecue admits publicly that they were financed by a very well-known Haitian oligarch who's a U.S. Ally in Haiti named Boulos, Reginald Boulos, who helped make the coup against Aristide in 2004. And Barbecue thanks him for his financing.
I want to pick up on what you were saying earlier about the Petrocaribe aid program, this essentially oil program from Venezuela that was meant to be an aid program for Haiti. I understand that the program is now defunct. Has there been any accountability for that as well?
Not at all. And even there's been reports, corrupt as it is, even within the Haitian Senate, there's been a report on this connecting the regime to the stolen money and additional documentation done inside of Haiti. It's very clear that Jovenel Moïse and Martelly Lee are connected to this looting of the public funds, but there's been no accountability. What happened is the government of Venezuela, starting under Chavez and continuing under Maduro, would provide very low-cost oil below market rate to the Haitian government, with the idea that when the Haitian government got that, it would, of course, eventually pay back the Haitian government, but also use the profit that the Haitian government obtained from selling the oil to private concerns inside of Haiti, that it would invest in social services like healthcare, like education, like road repair. And that's also part of what's really galvanizing the protests, is not only is the money missing, but that very infrastructure is deteriorated dramatically under the current regime.
Now, all of this is happening with these protests. What sort of international pressure has there been around what Haiti is going through and the president's role?
Well, unfortunately, the Haitians too often struggle in relative isolation from meaningful international solidarity. So that's part of what Haiti Action Committee, our group here in the Bay Area, we're trying to, of course, generate that. But the contrast, say, with the protests in Hong Kong, which are just widely covered and receive tons of USAID money, and down to even support for, like, protesters have state-of-the-art tear gas masks and umbrellas. In Haiti, you've got these unarmed people being systematically killed and disappeared without much international support and awareness.
And of course, the difference is that the U.S. backs the government of Jovenel Moïse.
Absolutely. Just like it backs the coup regime in Honduras and the regime in Egypt and, so many, neocolonial dictatorships throughout the world. But the you asked earlier about the Lavalas movement. That still remains the most powerful guiding force of the popular movement inside of Haiti. So Famille Lavalas is very much active despite these risks. And in fact, under this really difficult circumstance, President Aristide and a former First Lady Mildred Aristide have launched with other Famille Lavalas activists this incredible, they've reopened the UNIFA, it's a university, the Aristide University, that when we were there last March investigating the La Saline massacre, we were also able, the small team I was with, including folks from the National Lawyers Guild and Margaret Prescott from Sojourner Truth on KPFK, we were also able to attend the graduation ceremony of Haiti's future doctors and lawyers and nurses coming out of UNIFA. So despite this horrific repression, the movement is not only taking to the streets, it's building these incredible institutions that represent a new Haiti. So when people ask, what can they do? We need to take to the streets here, like we are in the Bay Area this week. It's part of a week of solidarity and beyond. But we also need to ask listeners and folks to dig deep and give to UNIFA and to these institutions. Right now, UNIFA is trying to open up a teacher hospital on campus. We're trying to raise funds to support this project. And so we would encourage listeners to check out the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund. That's online, of course, just Google it. And that's a great way to make sure every penny goes to the people's movement in Haiti, unlike so much of the earthquake relief, which is donated to groups like the Red Cross and completely disappeared or went into fancy hotels.
And I do also want to extend a thank you to my colleague, Margaret Prescott, for covering this issue and alerting myself and other journalists of what's happening in Haiti, because it hasn't been getting very much press coverage here in the U.S. One of the other news reports around the ongoing corruption and, frankly, pretty brazen impunity is that just ahead of the United Nations meeting, minister in President Moise's government withdrew about $300,000 from a government bank account to fund President Jovenel Moise's trip, and then took out an additional $60,000 from the New York consulate's account, so about $350,000. This is something that an opposition senator is alleging has happened. Is this something that's getting attention too? I mean, it seems as though if this is true, it seems as though Jovenel Moise is not really learning the lesson of what he's facing from the protests.
Not at all. And, you know, when the mainstream corporate media in the U.S. does cover Haiti, you know, for example, the La Saline massacre did break a little bit into some of the mainstream media, but very barely. And for example, through the Miami Herald. But for the most part, when it does break through, it's being misrepresented as a gang conflict, which fits a very racist narrative of, you know, here's a black country and gangs killing each other. And that obscures the reality, which is the paramilitary unit that's heavily weaponized and went in with the police and is coordinated by the regime is not a gang by the way we think of a gang. It's a death squad that was serving a political agenda to destroy a lava loss, try to destroy a lava loss basehold of resistance. So part of our work, and I'm so appreciate your diligent reporting on so many issues over the years, and you know it's an honor to be here with you. But part of our work is to really get the grassroots progressive media to really start to zoom in on what's happening in Haiti. Haiti's a frontline struggle against global imperialism, and it has been since the Haitian Revolution. The people need our solidarity, and part of that is we just have to break through that information blockade, even in the progressive press.
And I'm wondering what the political opposition is right now that Jovenel Moise is facing, Seth. Is there a principled political opposition that is able to challenge the president and his government that people can get behind, or that the Lavalas party might be supporting, or is the opposition also problematic?
So the Famille Lavalas movement and the party and the Lavalas movement remain the vast majority of the poor majority of Haiti remain participants, not just followers, but participants in co-creating this movement. And so their statement, crisis and resolution, which is on our website, by the way, HaitiSolidarity.net, lays out a transition plan. And they're willing to work with other sectors of the opposition to create an interim government, to, again, invest in public infrastructure, to hold officials accountable for crimes like the La Saline massacre and the theft of funds. But there are, like with any movement, there are also more opportunistic sectors of opposition not connected to Famille Lavalas that usually serve a middle or upper class agenda. And undoubtedly, there's a COINTELPRO style operation by U.S. State Department and others to fragment the opposition and to try to cultivate the more opportunistic sectors of opposition. But from what I can tell, and all the reports I'm hearing from on the ground in Haiti, and from what I can tell from the many trips I've made to Haiti, is that the grassroots, the poor majority, remain very clear and remain very much committed to the Lavalas movement.
You mentioned that there are going to be protests in the Bay Area in solidarity with Haitian people this week. Is there a specific ask of our political representatives here in the United States, members of Congress that are friends of Haiti, truly friends of Haiti, not just friends of whoever's in power in Haiti, that are sponsoring, you know, favorable pieces of legislation? What is the political demand that supporters here in the United States of the Haitian movement for freedom can support, can push for?
So, yeah, our demands are that the U.S. government, starting with Congress, since it controls power of the purse through appropriations, need to cut off funding for the Haitian police. Since 2011, my Congresswoman Anna Eshoo uncovered from the State Department that the U.S. has funded over $100 million, spent $100 million of our taxpayer money to the Haitian police. The Haitian police, it's not just an issue of a few bad apples. The Haitian police are deeply tied in to these massacres and into this repression. So that's one aspect of the demand, is to cut off the funding and the training to the security forces inside of Haiti. And then on top of that, we need the Trump administration and the U.S. government. Of course, the Trump administration is the Trump administration, but we need Congress to push to stop diplomatically treating this regime as a legitimate regime. The contrast with Venezuela is stunning. Here is a government that actually has ties to in Venezuela to the popular masses. And that there's evidence of a, you know, that it's a democratic government despite U.S. propaganda, and yet the U.S. has vigorously moved to topple it and install an upper class politician in Venezuela that nobody really is behind, who's agreed to sell off the oil. In Haiti, the U.S. has installed a regime that's truly unpopular, that's linked to horrific massacres. So our demands are: stop funding the police, stop supporting this regime, and instead recognize the right of the Haitian people to genuine sovereignty and human rights.
Well, give out that website once more, Seth.
Absolutely. So our website is HaitiSolidarity.net. And we have information, including the La Saline report that we wrote with the National Lawyers Guild and lots of other information.
Well, good luck to you. And thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate you shedding light on this undercovered story. Thanks so much, Seth.
Thank you, Sonali. Okay.
My guest has been Seth Donnelly, member of the Haiti Action Committee and a public high school teacher in the Bay Area of California. In 2005, he authored the report Growing Evidence of a Massacre by UN Occupation Forces in Port-au-Prince, neighborhood of Cité Soleil. He's also co-authored the more recent report, The La Saline Massacre and the Human Rights Crisis in Haiti. We've been discussing the uprising in Haiti. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.